Hi, everybody, and welcome to The Stone Chapel, a podcast of the staff and friends of the Lanier Theological Library in Houston, Texas. My name is David Capes. I'm the Senior Research Fellow at the Library and your host for this series of podcasts. Our purpose is fairly simple. We want to bring to you great conversations with leading experts from around the world on biblical, theological, historical, and archaeological themes. Well, the list goes on. So sit back, relax, and enjoy. Joining me today on the Stone Chapel is Dr. Scott Sager. He's Vice President for Church Services and a member of the Bible faculty at Lipscomb University in Nashville, Tennessee. He's a friend of the library. He's a friend to a lot of people at the library. And he's just really a gift to our library there in Nashville. And I know you're close with Mark as well. Thanks so much for being with us today to talk about your book, Jesus in Isolation, Lazarus, Viruses, and Us, published by Whippenstock in 2021. So this is fresh off the press. Dr. Sager, thanks for being with us.
Hey, David, good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
It's good to see you once again after such a long time.
It has been a while. I was thinking about the last time I got to go to Houston, and it was Christmas of 2019.
Ah, okay.
So it's
been
a while.
Were you here for one of the hymn sings, or were you here
That's what I was here for. Yeah, it was great.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the place was full, and it was decorated, and it was beautiful. Mm-hmm. This place is wonderful at Christmas.
I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, it's wonderful all the time, but at Christmas in particular. Anyway, first of all, congratulations on the book. It's a great book. It reads well. I want to talk a little bit about it with you. It's called Jesus in Isolation, Lazarus, Viruses, and Us. So what's the big idea? What are you trying to do with this book, Scott?
Well, it's funny that this book actually began as a paper that I wrote for my third-year Greek class in graduate school. And the
really?
Professor... Yeah, the professor said I should publish it, and so I've been sitting on it for half a lifetime. But once I read N.T. Wright's book, Surprised by Hope, wrestled with resurrection as life after life after death, I began to realize that that was what I was missing from my full understanding of Lazarus, that Lazarus is... the model of life after life after death. And yet Jesus is also a big part of this isolation that happens to Jesus, to Mary, to Martha, to Lazarus himself, and that somehow out of this isolation comes resurrection and new life.
So when you wrote this paper as a graduate student, you had no idea COVID was coming.
No idea. And, you know, when I wrote the book for the first time, I wrote it in 2019. And I rewrote it again once COVID hit to think through the impact of the virus. And it was only then that I began to think through what was it that probably killed Lazarus. Because what we know is that he was sick.
Right.
It wasn't a long-term sickness. It was something that came on him fast and took his life in just a matter of days.
Didn't seem to be an accident that he never recovered from or something like that, yeah.
And so I began to realize that it was probably something in the virus family that affected Lazarus in this way. And so letting that kind of be the backdrop and them sending a telegram to Jesus saying, the one that you love is sick, and then Jesus not being able to come. And the only reason we know he couldn't come is because God the Father wouldn't let God the Son go. And so I just rewrote the book again on the other side of COVID to try and really look at isolation and look at viruses and look kind of at the impact of all of this. And how do we understand death and dying and resurrection in light of this important story?
Yeah. And these are ultimate questions, aren't they? These aren't just sort of tangential questions to us. These are ultimate questions.
I think so. And that's why I think that the story of Jesus and Lazarus in John 11, a lot of people call it the hinge to the Gospel of John, that it's the last of the seven signs, but it's also the launching point towards Jesus' own passion. And so it plays this really important place in finishing up the Book of Signs as the seventh sign, but also pointing towards Jesus and the cross. And so I think it's supposed to be the story that kind of moves us towards the passion, towards the cross, and towards what Jesus' ultimate redemption is going to be for us.
And it is the resurrection of the body, right, that ends the gospel. I mean, it's not the exact end because there's another chapter, a prologue, but it ends with the resurrection of Jesus, which is looking back sort of what happens with Lazarus, right?
I think so. And that's where I try to kind of bring out the resurrection of Jesus. But then I tried to close the book by arguing that Lazarus is living out what resurrection and life looks like for all of us. And, you know, he's been given his life back again. That first happened when Jesus raised him from the dead. But then I argue that he would have been, because he lived 1.2 miles from Jerusalem, that he would have been one of the people that was there for Pentecost.
Interesting.
And okay. So when 3,000 are baptized on that day, and they die to their old life, and they rise from the waters of baptism to live out a new life, Lazarus is living into that aspect of resurrection as well. But he's doing it in a way that no one else can do it, because he has this perspective on death and resurrection that is just, you know, profound.
Sure. So when you think about isolation before COVID, I mean, the idea of isolation, I know the word isolation was not kind of an original part of it, and you went back and rewrote it during that time. But when you thought about the reality of isolation before COVID, what were you thinking about exactly?
Well, I had originally titled the book Jesus in the Waiting Room, and I was realizing that even Jesus had to learn obedience through the things that he suffered. That's what Hebrews tells us.
Right.
And so there's some things that you can only learn by experience, that we have to grow through the things that we go through. And so even Jesus had to experience isolation so that he could understand it, so that he could speak out of it to the rest of us. And so I think that what God did was he took Jesus and said, that's your best friend. That's the person that you love the most. And I'm not going to let you go and be there as he's dying. You're going to miss the funeral. You're not going to be there for the sisters. And you're going to get a feeling for what it's like to be in isolation. And I feel like that's what so many of us have been through in the last year and a half. You know, funerals that we didn't get to attend, places that we wanted to be, people that we wanted to be with. I mean, it breaks our heart to watch people with their hand on the glass of a nursing home, wishing that they could be with their loved one inside.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what God did to Jesus by basically putting him in time out, making him stay where he was for two more days before letting him come to Mary and Martha and to the tomb of Lazarus.
Hmm. You've written this in a way that looks like it could be a study book, a book that people, because you've got questions on each chapter, you've got kind of a summary. I think about Mark's points for home when he teaches biblical literacy. You've got a whole chapter kind of dedicated to here are our points. I think there's 30 of them in the back, something like that. How are people using this book now that you know about?
It's exciting. Right off the bat, people said, we're going to use this in our small group this summer. And so there are people all over the country that are reading through this a chapter a week. And then there's a study guide at the back that has discussion questions for each week. And then there's also, I've got a website, wscottsager.com, where I've done little intro videos that would go before a small group study. And so people can go and watch those before they participate in the small group study as well.
I should have seen those before we talked today. I didn't know that those were out there.
Yeah, there's one of those for every chapter. And because I tried to write a really tight narrative about Jesus, I wanted this to be a book. I want people, when they read this book, to realize that Jesus is the hero of every human story. And that first and foremost, this is a book about Jesus being the hero for Mary and Martha, for Lazarus, and if we'll let him, he's the hero for our story too. And that every one of us needs a hero. And and so I really wanted to present Jesus in such a way as that he's the hero of that story. He's the hero of our story. And so I didn't want to stop too much and make points that would break the flow of the book.
Yeah.
It's a great story.
Yeah.
And so that's why I loaded all of the principles or implications from the whole book kind of in that final chapter, where here's 30 things that if you paid attention as you work through the book, these are the points that were generated through the book.
Yeah. I made a note here to myself as I was reading through it. This seems like a sustained meditation through John 11.
Well, that's an honor. And I appreciate you saying that.
Well, so. I think that sounds like what you were hoping to do. Early in the book, you say something that I just thought was phenomenal. And I want to read it and just get your response. Because you quote a good bit of poetry in the book. Mm-hmm. And you think that we have an important place for poets and poetry. And this is what you say. At the end of each chapter, a poem has been selected as a significant glimpse into the deep drama within every chapter. Most churches have preachers, priests, and parishioners, but often lack poets. In the world of Twitter, Instagram, and email, God's people long for the perspective of the poet without even realizing it. I thought that was phenomenal.
I appreciate it. I did not grow up loving poetry. I was a guy's guy. I played football. But as I have looked at the human story of the Lazarus story, I just began to realize that some of the things that captured the essence of the story best were the poets. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was very impressed with some of the ancient poets that we were able to pull poems from that are, you know, from the 5th century, 6th century, or John Donne and some of the old writers who have just kind of thought deeply, but give us words that allow us all to kind of enter into the catharsis of what's happening and meditate on it in that way. And so I just feel like when we're going through hard times, sometimes the poets capture it better than any of the rest of us.
Well, you know, a lot of folks find solace in hard times in books like the Book of Psalms, mm-hmm. because it's Hebrew poetry. It's not our poetry, but it's Hebrew poetry. But there's a rhythm, there's a rhyme to it in a good translation. And I think those poets from the biblical era really helped speak to us in those moments. But mm-hmm. I specifically was interested in your thoughts about our world of Twitter and Instagram compared to the life of poets. Because it's easy to write 100 and whatever words on a Twitter thing that sort of don't make a whole lot of sense. But it's difficult to write poetry because you're trying to, in such a small space, concentrate the human story, as you say.
And I think what poets do and what I try to do in this book is to argue that let's make every word matter. Poets don't waste words. They don't just have throwaway words. They really, every word captures something that's very important to the human dimension, to the human drama. And that's where I just felt like the poems and the poetry that was selected for this book kind of helped to move along this great narrative that we have in the Lazarus story.
Yeah. I remember when this COVID thing happened, a lot of people were saying, oh, you know, they're working from home now, and I really like being around the dog during the day. And the idea was, oh, this is fun, right? Mm-hmm. But as it drug on, it became something else altogether. But in the book, you talk about isolation not as an enemy. You talk about it as a gift.
It is a friend. If you look at it, one of my professors in college, he's passed away now. His name was Charles Seibert. But he said that reality is your friend. But isolation can be our friend because it's there that we discover that we're really not alone, that God is present with us, that God suffers with us, that the tears that Jesus sheds in the Lazarus story are the very tears of God. And that God walks with us through these times, and it's isolation that we grow through what we go through. We come out changed people. We don't long for isolation, None of us want to program for isolation, but what we've discovered is that the people that we often meet that have the greatest depth, the greatest wisdom, the greatest insight are the people who have traveled through isolation with Jesus and have come out on the other side stronger, strengthened, and with a hope that that nobody else knows how to, they don't understand that kind of hope. You know, that's the hope that Paul was talking about when he said, we grieve as people who still have hope.
Yeah. We don't grieve without that hope, do we?
Yeah.
And I think that's a considerable part of what I felt like you were trying to do. I saw a lot of C.S. Lewis in the book. Mm-hmm. And I really like that. And of course, you know, we love C.S. Lewis at the Lanier Theological Library.
You sure do. And yeah. That the exhibit that you have there is one of the finest I've ever seen. And just, you know, every time I go there, I go back to look at something that I haven't noticed before, this part of your C.S. Lewis collection that's just amazing. But what I've tried to do over the last few years, I've become a real Audible fan. And so I listen to books on tape constantly. And so I've tried to listen to every C.S. Lewis book that there is at least twice in the last 3 years.
Wow.
And so,
you could write a C.S. Lewis theology or something.
The the worry that I have is that I will plagiarize C.S. Lewis without knowing it.
Yeah.
Because I'm listening to him constantly. And so I just feel like the language of C.S. Lewis, the perspective, I want as much of that as I can get. And so I listened to his books. And then I decided I wanted to listen to the people that were shaping C.S. Lewis.
Ah, yes.
And so that's what made me such a G.K. Chesterton fan.
Yeah. Number of quotes from G.K.
Here. Number of quotes from him. I thought, well, if this is the guy that had such an influence on C.S. Lewis, I want to see what he had to say.
Yeah.
And so I went back and tried to pull as many of his books as I could and read and listen to those as well.
Well, we've been talking to Dr. Scott Sager, who is the author of a new book. It really is a hot off the presses in 2021, Jesus in Isolation, Lazarus, Viruses, and Us, published by Wiffenstock. Congratulations again on the book. It's a fine book. It's easy to read. It's a good read. As I said in my notes, a sustained meditation on one of the most, I think, important, pivotal, hinge chapters of the book of John. Well done, Scott. Thank you for being
here. I appreciate it. Thank you. Thanks for having me with you today.
Thanks to Brent Johnson and Janet Seifert for editing these podcasts. Thanks as well to Phil Keggy for our music. These podcasts are made possible by the generosity of Mark and Becky Lanier and the Lanier Theological Library Foundation. If you have questions, comments, or would just like to be in touch, please email us at podcast@lanierlibrary.org. Lanier is L-A-N-I-E-R. Thanks for listening.